Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. And I am deeply grateful you chose to be with me on this New Year's week, December 29th, 2018. One more program for the year and we're done. I have great love for this time of year. It's for me, it's a time of sacredness. I feel very grateful for the year. I feel very grateful for your listening, your kindness in listening to me, your questions. They're amazing. And I always like to have kind of a potpourri thing here at the end of the year. I want to remind you, we're in the final phases of our fundraising drive. Our mystery donor is going to double your donations from now till January 2nd. So I hope that you will make a donation, become a sponsor. We're very close to losing the radio program, but such as it is, it's the way people are these days. So if we do, we do. And if we don't, we don't. I would be happy to continue on. But I feel like if there is no support, there's no interest. But I still get all of these emails every day on subjects and questions that people have. So I'm hoping that you will become a sponsor. It's really important you become a sponsor. And for your sponsorship, you get many wonderful things. The message of the month, access to my commentaries, podcasts, videocasts, and all of the discourses I did for my TV programs throughout the years. And I think there's some 122 discourses there. They're all yours. You can download them and listen to them whenever you like and enjoy them. They are on all sorts of subjects that I did. And one of the new series that's coming out, What is the Point of It All, is in there. The Eightfold Path of Buddha. The Beatitudes, which I think are the most important and interesting teachings the world has ever seen. Just, they really are. There's the Sound of One Hand Clapping, the Tao. There's all sorts of things. Nobody Likes You Anyway. All those are yours for free for becoming a sponsor. So if you're interested in helping our radio program and serving humankind and helping yourself at the same time, I'm hoping that you will become a sponsor and help us sustain this program. We'll know in the next week or so whether we're going to be able to continue or not. We'll see. Okay, let's look at is life a pain? That's kind of the subject. I get all sorts of emails about what is the meaning of life and all that, as if I have not answered all this stuff before. But I think people listen for a while and then they quit, and then they come back and listen for a while and then they quit. So there's no continuity in it. So I want to give a definition of life before we do all this. And here's the definition according to the dictionary. The condition that distinguishes animals and plants from inorganic matter, including the capacity for growth, reproduction, functional activity. Continual change preceding death. That's it. And then that little rigmarole stuff. And that's probably the way most people look at it. I have found this to be true with the human beings that I deal with in counseling and everything. They have no idea what their life is all about. And of course, they say all these strange things like, I don't know why I'm here and what the meaning of my life is. After they've already lived an entire lifetime, shall we say, squandering it, and not using it for any particular reason other than their gross satisfactions of, you know, their genetic dispositions like eating, drinking. I have to admit, I'm a kind of a numb-num. I don't drink. Never have. Never use pot. Never use drugs. It's not a moral issue with me. It really isn't. It's just that I don't have that genetic in me. And I understand, I do a lot of counseling with people that do have that genetic thing. And I can't change them. I I can only help them with the psychology that pounds away at their head every day about wanting to avoid the pain of life. And this is what I hear a great deal about the pain of life and how hard it is to deal with it. So people will use what I call supplemental materials like drugs and alcohol to sustain in some way, their ability to accept the things that they don't like or deal with the things they don't like or feel the pain of the things they don't like. And everybody brings about pain in their life one way or another. It isn't life doing it. It's Greg. He brings on his own pain as you do. So with that as a premise, I'm going to go to the first question by Jesse. He does not tell me where he lives. Why do you think, Greg, we don't care about our minds and the pain you say comes from them, Jesse? Jesse, we are screwed before we ever come out of the womb, out of the chute, as I call it. Our biology sets the tone for most of us. And when you have a human body and the tremendous impulses that it has, these impulses and these genetic traits and the synapses firing off in the brain and the chemicals that are going on with the estrogen and all sorts of things go on inside of our bodies. It is hard not to follow them. It is hard not to think of them as the form of our identity and our life. Why do you think, you ask me, we don't care about our minds? Because our minds are subservient to our bodies. And the reason for that, Jesse, is because of emotion. The emotions dictate how my mind will think, the way my mind will think, and why my mind will think in any given pattern that it is doing. So this all occurred in the womb. Now, when you come out of the womb, you have a choice. And it's a very difficult one because there is deep inside of all of us this curious thing called the state of the soul. And it is not amplified very much by our parents. And my parents never said a word about it. Hell, they didn't even know what it was. My parents, I can never remember my parents saying anything remotely spiritual to me. And yet I was, when I was a child and still am, deeply invested in it because I wanted to know why. I wanted to know what was really going on. My mind was not pointed towards the things that my parents' minds were pointed towards, which was their body, reproduction, you know, the definition of life here, the inorganic matter, the organic matter that distinguishes me from the animals and, you know, all that other stuff, reproduction, all of that. None of that was as important to me. I didn't wake up in the morning and think, I've got to find a mate. I've got to find a mate. I've got to find a job so I can have a mate. I never did any of that. It was not my deal in this lifetime. So for me, I looked at everything from the point of view of, well, I'm here. What am I supposed to do? What would make a fulfilling experience here? And then I went through all sorts of craziness, just like you, and had to deal with all sorts of issues with the body, the brain, the chemistry, you know, the DNA, all of that, just like you. Now, the reason I, in those days, you know, thought of my mind as something that was independent from my body was purely out of ignorance and absolutely wrong. It took me many years, both in meditation, in spiritual work, in dealing with the public, in dealing with people's obsessions, compulsions, and in my work as a counselor, as a teacher, all of that, to finally put it all together. And what I try to do with you here on radio and with all of you when I do counseling or anything is help you amass the information you have to a form of understanding that it is all futile to keep living by the body and the mind. And to start to understand, really, truly, Jesse, you're not going to believe me, but it is absolutely true. You don't need to think. Thinking is optional. Once you understand that basic premise, then your thoughts will look different to you. They will look like, in some ways, silly options that don't pertain to anything that is important in your lifetime. Silly options. They don't matter. They really don't. And I know you think they do, and I know you think that every thought you think is blah, blah, this and blah, blah, that. And if you follow those thoughts, there are consequences for following those thoughts, and you're going to find tremendous difficulty in your life. You won't know why that difficulty is there, but it is there, and bingo, there's the issues. Now, you can do this to nauseam if you want, which most people do. We like being ignorant about our minds because we're more interested in our emotions than we are what our emotions do to the state of our mind. So we just, you know, haphazardly go about our living, never really seeing the meaning of our existence upon the face of our life. We really don't see it. So basically, Jesse, we don't care. The populace is at the beck and call of their emotions. And whatever their emotions dictate to them is going to be the cause of their life, the excuse of their living. It's going to cause them tremendous pain and suffering. And we're very small-minded, Jesse, just in general. We don't think about the begats, how something I might enact in my mind through my body begats this, begats that, and begats that, and how it pours out into the world. And we also don't care about each other. We don't see how little decision you make within yourself affects people all over the world. All over the world. Just throwing that water bottle away and not recycling it has repercussions on the ocean, on the environment, on other people. You have no idea how connected we are in oneness to it all. And for the most part, most people don't care. Until it affects them, they don't care. So there is nothing I can do to, and nor anyone else, to urge you to awaken to your heart and to see the antidote for all of this. I can tell you about it. I can point my finger at it. But as the old Zen saying goes, look where I'm pointing. Don't bite my finger. You're going to bite my finger. And Al Gore said it so beautifully when he said, you know, it's an inconvenient truth. And it is. All things that would help humankind are inconvenient truths. And nobody wants to do them because they're no fun. They're no fun. And why should I do it when they're not doing it? That kind of thing. One last thing, Jesse. I work at hospice, and I can tell you, the end is not pleasant. And when you think about following your body, which is going to do what the body does, in your opinion, you will see it as betrayal, you're going to have a lot of thoughts about why did I devote my life to this thing that is killing itself? You should be aware of that, Jesse. That'll answer your question. We don't care about our mind because right now we don't think we have to. Just think about it. Jesse, please forgive me. Namaste. The next question from Jerry. He does not tell me where he lives. Jerry, I want to thank you for your kind comments about the TV program, Stu. Thank you. Living is hard, Jerry says, and unless you have money, it gets really, really hard. Why is money a factor in our happiness. Money is not a factor in our happiness. Money is not a sign of doing well or not doing well. Money is the measure of the heart, how you use it. You either use it for your emotions or you use it for your authentic heart. If you use it for emotions, you will use it to placate. You will use it to undermine your own life by giving yourself gratifications that do nothing but weaken your position within your own inner demeanor. You will not be disciplined. You will lose discipline. It depends on how you use the money. It isn't money is the root of all evil, because it's not. It's the root of many wonderful good things. It's the user, the person who is using the money, that is the difficulty. And the insecure, which there are billions and billions of people who are insecure, use it as a means to the end of the meaning of their life. And this is where they blow it big time. Money serves humankind. If you use money to serve humankind, to help, if you use money to sustain kindness and mercy, then you have done something magnificent with it. If you use it to serve your needs and only your needs, and hide and try to use money so you don't need other people, so you don't have to be involved in helping the world, then you have come to a place where you are hoarding. And this hoarding is because you do not have the, forgive me for saying this, basic intelligence to understand where the hell you are. You are in a world that is hell. And if you have not recognized that yet, because everything seems so pleasant to you, it is only because you're misinterpreting the whole situation. This world needs help. It does you no good at all to live in the cycle of birth and death, over and over and over again, and live in your little cocoon where you think that in this living in this cocoon, you are saving yourself and you are not like other people. You and I are subject to birth and death at all times. This is the reward we get for being selfish, short-sighted, mediocre, pedestrian. If you truly want to see the bigger picture, you will have to see beyond your body and the function of your body. You will have to see beyond your beliefs and the functions that your beliefs serve, so you don't have to do the things that are necessary for love. You will have to look at that bigger picture. If you don't do any of that, you will miss entirely what it means to know the love that lives within your heart, your authentic heart. Life is hard because we have come to conclusions, Jerry. Conclusions about ourselves and conclusions about other people. Those conclusions become very, very difficult things to overcome. They are a bias in our life. And when I am biased based on the conclusions I've come to about my livingness, I have completely devoided myself of the capacity for compassion and mercy. Every single person listening to my voice right now matters. Every person. How you live this life matters. What you do in this world matters. And you are either doing things that serve humankind and help people, or you are a taker, and you are only doing things to serve yourself. And that, of course, well, that's karma in its deepest form, in its more simplistic form, but you understand what I'm saying. So you ask me, living is hard unless you have money. How do you change all this? than, you know, natural thought. Most people would think politics, but it's not. It's your relationship to your heart, your authentic heart, the part of you that is kind, merciful, the part of you that gives and forgives. Those are the only things that matter. If you can change into that, if you can transform into compassion and mercy, like Jesus said, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. If you can live in that kind of stance inside yourself, that kind of posture, much goodness will always be yours, always. Jerry, I hope that helped, and I wish you a very blessed and conscious new year. And the last question from Don. He says, Greg, I need to change. How do I change? I mean, real change. I want a change that doesn't get too far into my life, but I do need to change. Don. You don't want it to get too far into your life? Change changes everything. What are you saying here? Do you realize you said, I want to change, and then you said in the last part of your little email, I'm never going to change? I don't want it to change things in my life and go too far? What are you afraid of? You're afraid that you won't fit in anymore? I find that most people don't want to change because they're afraid they won't fit into the society. Their families will look at them and shake their heads and think, you know, you've gone crazy. When people come in, new people come into this work with me, they're always first afraid that their family will think they're in a cult. Because we're doing things like meditation and inner work and questioning our motives, looking at our genetics, our DNA, and what's going on. And people don't have much of a capacity for tolerance with all of that. So when they go back and try to explain that to their family thinks, oh, you've gotten into a cult. As if we are not all cults here on this earth. Everybody, every family is a cult. So you have to start looking at your life from a different perspective. I don't think, dear Don, you're sincere enough yet. You need more pain. You need whatever you need that will get you off of the brown liquor of your brain. You're not ready for change yet. You want changes in your life. You want to be fixed, but you don't want to be changed. You want your life different, but you don't want to do the things that would make your life different. You're afraid. And you still don't see that you're on a collision course with yourself eventually at the end of your life, no matter what you do. So you're not convinced. You don't have the mental acuity to really see what's going on with your life and what is really happening, much less to really want an authentic change. But I'm telling you, change is coming for all of us, one way or another. And if you are not flexible and you are not willing, this change can be very, very difficult. It can seem life-threatening when it's really only life-affirming. The change we need is to go from the emotionality of our body to the authentic heart of our being, to find and recognize the essence of the soul. And the reason we do suffer is because we live as soulless human beings, sapiens. We're a biological experiment. That's all we are. And we live in our biology for our biology, and we believe that the science of that gives us the excuse to live the way we do in such pain and sorrow. You haven't recognized yet, dear Dawn, the significance of your life. And no one can do this for you. I can't do it for you. No one can bring this to a conclusion or into some sort of focus for you, but you. You will have to see what it means to truly live. Thank you, Don, for your question. I didn't mean to cap on you, but Happy New Year, hey? I hope you have a beautiful day. We'll be back on the air tomorrow. Please forgive me, won't you? Namaste.